Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. Your Peugeot car or van might benefit from a free software upgrade. For more information and to find out if this applies to your vehicle, call the lads in Slattery's Garage, puck on 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.
Thanks, Pat, and you're very welcome back to Tip Today, 1800-938-007, excuse me. You can text and WhatsApp 083-311-3311, whatever way you make contact with us, we'd be glad to hear from you.
For every problem, there's a solution. Dear Phil, on Tip Today with Phil Prendergast.
And Dear Phil is with me. Hello, Phil, how are you?
Good morning, dear friend.
You're looking all summery today, I can tell you. I'm colourblind, but I know that's summery.
Yeah, one has to dress according to the weather and get it wrong. But anyway.
Yes, yeah. Beautiful yesterday. Look at it.
Absolutely. Today. But your, yeah. I suppose the ground might be a little bit dry, I don't think.
I suppose. All right, let us have a look at what's coming into us then. Interesting couple of letters today, rather different. First one, Dear Phil, I work in an office with a number of people. We all get on really well and have good banter, but one colleague has an annoying habit that's really getting to me. He's given up cigarettes after smoking for years, and I was delighted personally because whenever he would go for a smoking break, he would come back stinking of cigarettes. Now he's switched to vaping. So while the smell is gone, he's taken to vaping at his desk. Now he just started doing it. Nobody said anything so far. So I suppose he felt he wasn't bothering anybody, but it really bothers me. He does it constantly, so there's always a cloud hanging in our office. The smell isn't bad because he vapes a fruity flavour, but it's just the cloud that bothers me, and it annoys me that he has so little consideration for everybody else in the office. I haven't said it to anybody else, so I don't know if it's just me, and I don't want to create a bad atmosphere among our colleagues when we all get on so well, but I'm wondering, what should I do?
Well, I think this is probably a little bit difficult because I was looking up all around vaping and, you know, if the residual sort of whatever cloud or whatever it is, if it's harmful. At the moment, research doesn't back that. But I think the very idea that if previously when he needed to have some sort of a soothe for himself, which was cigarettes, and now it's obviously better for him not to have cigarettes, but he's doing the vaping. I don't think it was okay then to just legitimise for himself to be able to do that within the office, because I think that any activity like that is better off in having a formal process for it. I do believe that the girl herself shouldn't maybe get upset. Maybe she should have a casual chat with some of her other colleagues, or maybe it should be just left over to whoever is the supervisor on that shift in the office, maybe to have a quiet word and just say, listen, it would be better if you just went outside to have the vapes, as yet it's unknown what the effects are, and it might be bothering some of your colleagues.
He seems to be vaping all of the time, and that has struck me about people who vape. It's not just going out for a vape and coming back. They seem to vape.
Yeah, and Fran, like, there is something in it that's making them do that. So it is an addictive thing. As yet, I don't think we have the outcomes of what long-term use of vaping is, because we don't have sufficient length.
But there are concerns, are there?
There are concerns. Yeah. And there's huge concerns as well when you see kids vaping and, you know, normalising that. And it's not normal. Sucking in anything, be it fruit or whatever. And I mean, I think the whole industry is very, very cunning, because whatever they do, they get to jazz something up and it smells nice, and, you know, it's not the awful cigarettes. Now, and I smoked for a long period of time. Now, I haven't smoked in about 30 years, but I really sort of, when we were smoking, we were student nurses, of course we were. And I can remember doing, Mr. Neavesy from Galway used to come down and he used to do cancer and lung removals once a month. And I remember coming out to the coffee table afterwards, and he came out and I had stood in with him and I lit up a major.
Because I
was, that's called detachment. You just think, that won't happen to me, sure, I'm young. But anyway, look, very foolish, very stupid things we did at the time. It's equally strange now that bad habits are things that are not exactly beneficial to the whole environment, or that it's just beneficial to him. It shouldn't be that he can do that constantly at the desk.
Interesting.
In my
yeah.
view. And yeah. I wonder what other people would think about that.
Yeah, I think because we discussed it quite a few times on the show, there's a lot of concern about younger people because it's kind of a fashion statement now. The appliance is kind of fashionable and
well,
cool.
Well, you see, they jazz up everything, Fran. And yeah. I mean, if I want to market something, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it in such a way that it makes it cool. And I'm doing the inverted commas now for the cool.
Yes.
Because they want to seem like they're, you know, this is not anything like, you know, smoking hash, or it's not like smoking cigarettes, or it's not like smoking a pipe. I knew a girl that used to smoke a pipe, actually, but it's all very, you know, they're normalising something that is still harmful, and we don't know yet the effects or the long-term effects of this because we haven't had sufficient time for it yes. to be evaluated properly. And to do a proper evaluation, you do need instances, and you need groups and age groups, and you need to do the older age group, people that have quit smoking, people that are smoking in vaping because they can vape while they're in hospital, or they can vape in the bathroom and there's not that smell there to give that away, except now they might smell all fruity. But they'll go around with a thing of Redox, floral thisy or thatty and
that
whatever.
We're breathing in as
and
well.
We'll breathe
you know,
that in too, yeah. yeah.
Of course, yeah.
yeah.
What was it like to see the diseased lungs?
Oh, it was horrendous because you didn't get to see what was normal.
Oh,
so you'd only get to see what was normal on a clip
smoker.
Or a, you know, you'd only get to see what was normal
oh,
in
sorry.
A normal lung.
Yes.
You'd only get to see that online. And at the time, we didn't have access to pressing a little button and going in and saying, what's a normal lung look like? This looked horrendous because it was discoloured and it was awful, awful. But of course, the detachment allowed me at the time of 19 years
of course,
age, whatever,
invincible
to go out straight away and have a fag.
Isn't it incredible altogether?
It's all very right. bold.
But you do have concerns into the future about the effect of vaping.
I have concerns about anything that is marketed to such an extent that there's a huge amount of advertising, the subliminal advertising. There's targeted marketing for younger people. It's become cool to go outside even to vape, and you have a lighty up vape, or yours is turquoise and mine is yeah. blue and someone else's is green and pink, and you know, it's just again, it's the industry behind it is quite malignant, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, and cynical as well in
very,
its own way.
Very.
All right, our second letter. Dear Phil, I'm in my 40s and I was recently diagnosed with testicular cancer. The diagnosis obviously was devastating, but my prognosis is very good, so I'm hopeful that I will make a good recovery. My doctor has recommended surgery and a bout of preventative chemotherapy, but my wife is against the idea and I feel pulled on what I should do. My wife has been incredibly supportive to me and really dived into the subject to get a better understanding of what I have and what to expect. She went down a route of investigating natural treatments and alternative cures, and she is adamant that that is the route we should be taking. She's strongly against the idea of chemo and wants to put me on a strict plant-based diet and a natural supplement regimen. When I come out of surgery, she has had some disagreements with my doctors about this, but she is holding strong. She believes that this is the route we should take, and she has also convinced me with her arguments that chemo is too severe, with no guarantee that it will work, and feels I should be building up my natural immunity. My doctor says that's fine, but chemo is important to kill anything on the margins. I'm really conflicted on what I should do. I know my wife has only the best intentions, but I'd hate to have any regrets on the decision I make. What should I do? Complex, isn't it?
It's complex, Fran, but I honestly, honestly, honestly believe she should follow the medical advice. There is no point in a man that has an explicit diagnosis of testicular cancer, that she is deciding, well, do you know what, we're going to go with the natural route. She's not sitting with a pair of testicles that have cancer in them. He is. So I think he should follow the doctor's advice. I think it's very, very good that chemo is so brilliant these days, that people really get very, very effective treatment and management and come through chemo, the absolute finest. The finest. I think if she wants to put all sorts of good ideas in terms of health and all the rest of it, I think subsequent to his treatment and the management, and when that is over, then she should follow the route of this natural, giving him plants and all sorts of things. But she can't make a decision.
You have a medical background, Phil, and you're a little bit dismissive, are you, of the sort of plants and...
Not dismissive of it, Fran, but I mean, it's not like... You know, when you've had someone in the family that has had chemo and they've come, really, really good effect from it, you say to yourself, chemo isn't a killer. Chemo is a cure. And it's completely based on research. It's completely based on doctors knowing exactly what to prescribe for you if you get a diagnosis that has absolutely identified cancer. And this man has, and I don't think his wife should be taking the route that she's so vociferously taking simply because she has decided that he should not have chemo. The doctors have suggested that it's a very positive outcome for his particular diagnosis. There are many people that have had treatment for testicular cancer and cancers elsewhere indeed. And it's extremely... It's very easy these days to have your treatment and to continue and have continuous treatment if you have, if you have anything in your history that would suggest that having chemo, continuously is going to keep the cancer at bay, which it does do. It does do. So I think that she's probably... has good intentions. I've no doubt that she's not trying to do him bad, but to go against medical advice, and there's more than one doctor with the good advice they're giving him, and for her to be saying, well, we're going to do this and we'll do this and we'll do this and we'll do this and we'll do this. Do you know what? I mean, we all have... I can remember Linda McCartney, going through all this, and I think she ended up eating air or something. But she had cut out everything that could be deemed to be not good for your body. But you do need to have the specific cures that are available there to help people get through a time when they have had a diagnosis. There is absolute life after testicular cancer. There's a lot of people walking around that have had a clearance after they've had their treatment and their management. And there isn't anything to stop them doing other good stuff by maybe modifying a diet, maybe not having a lot of fats, maybe not having sugars, maybe not having too much alcohol, maybe having a glass of red wine instead of 2 pints of beer. Possibly would be better in that situation. But we're not here chatting about whether someone should or shouldn't drink. We're talking about doctors here that have said this is the management and the treatment, and it would be great if you went on that and get at least clear of the cancer and let the missus do all she wants then to get him on a thing. And I'm sure he'll be fully compliant with that.
Interesting. And you're saying to me that chemo has been refined over the years. I mean, I know it's available in tablet form now as well, isn't it?
My husband, as you probably know, is on chemo every 2 weeks, and he will be for his life, because the particular condition he had means that, he has a high chance of getting it back. I suppose if he didn't stay on chemo, it's a 10-minute injection. Into his stomach.
Right. And side effects?
He has no side effects.
Sorry for invading his privacy.
No, no side effects. He had, when he had his first radiation and chemo, when he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, he actually did lose all his hair. And the second time he lost all his hair was when he had a stem cell transplant. And there's 100 days of a recovery from that. And I would say it took the 100 days. He is gone off, probably doing a 75-kilometre cycle this morning.
Wow.
He did a cycle yesterday as well. I don't know how many kilometres. I just get, you know.
And currently on chemo.
It makes no doubt he's so fit and so healthy, and we're so grateful for that.
Well, thank you for that insight. I can understand the woman in question, like, looking at all the alternatives to...
Yeah, but I think the nub of it is that medical... advice is what they suggest, and the woman with the best of intentions, I understand she wants to keep what she might see as poisons in his body, but there's already cancer in his body, so I would want the chemo to kill off those cancer cells and make him not have cancer in his body. That's what I would want, and then I would sow go with whatever diet, clean eating, clean living, we all know about it, if she wants to do that and if he wants to, and if he's able for it. Because, do you know, this can have a very demoralising effect on a man. He's quite young and, you know, he's only in his 40s.
Yeah.
There's a lot of living yet left to do for him.
All right. Letter number three. So much food for thought there, Phil. Thank you for that. Letter number three. Dear Phil, I go for a swim in my local pool every morning and there's a regular group that go and we all get on well. And we've fallen into a routine where we tend to swim in the same lanes every morning and we're very considerate of each other. There was recently a new man who joined and goes at the same time as me in the morning. I don't like this man. He's very unfriendly and can be a bit of a bully in the pool. He obviously has his preferred lane and will swim there regardless whether or not somebody else is present. Every morning he pushes and forces someone out of the lane and it really bothers me. Nobody has ever said anything out of politeness, but I know others are getting sick of it as well. One morning, an older gentleman tried to stand his ground and stay in the lane, but the man just kept going and collided with him and then gave out to him for not moving out of the way. It's not just this behaviour, but I'm very uncomfortable when he swims next to me because he will make no attempt to keep his arms in when he passes and he's often grazed his hand off me. I don't know if he's a pervert or just being territorial with space, but it makes me very uncomfortable. I don't want to be one of those people who complains to management, but I'd love to teach this fella a lesson. What should I do?
Just reading this, you know, and I mean, I don't think he's been a pervert because he hits off her, but there's a sheer invasion of space here for people that are sharing a facility. And it is absolutely, absolutely within the remit of anyone to talk to the manager, if they're not already witnessing this, to say, please, will you just choose a lane and stop violating each other's lanes? Because there's nothing worse, really. I, myself, when I used to try to swim, I'd have to stay either at the left side of the pool or the right side of the pool to be right beside it, because otherwise I would immediately drown. And I know
I would immediately drown.
But so I would be hoping to be able to go, but I'd be over in the shallow side and going down to the deep end, but I'd have to be within a sight of grabbing onto the pool if I lost my confidence. But that's just me being the way I was when I was in the pool.
Yes.
I do think there's a kind of a protocol that one should adhere to, and it shouldn't involve invading other people's spaces. And I don't know if the pool has kind of ropes just in lanes and that, but I would prefer to see that lanes would be very specific, or that this gentleman that is new to them saying, excuse me, you seem to be actually encroaching on the space of others when they're in their lane doing their swims. It's, you know, it's quite invasive and can be upsetting for some, and it puts people off their stroke. And I prefer if you would stick to a lane and just, you know, give space to you and the other people in the pool. Give consideration to the other people in the pool. There is nothing snitching about going to the manager and saying, look, this has happened. This new fella's come in here. He's quite unfriendly. He's entitled to be unfriendly if he wants to. Mm. He's not entitled to be able to drive into everyone inside in the pool and swamp off into the middle of them.
But isn't this the same kind of personality and character that would be a bully in the pub or in the classroom?
Well, you see, if you can say is he's new to that pool and he seems to not be aware of the boundaries. He seems to not have any politeness in terms of that you would hit off someone else. I mean, if your toe snags someone else, you'd be kind of mortified over it. You're thinking, oh my God, I'm so sorry or whatever. But like, this is rude behaviour, really. And I don't think, you know, I don't think she should be afeared of going to management and saying this has been a new development.
Now, what do you make about the hand grazing off her and stuff?
I think that's probably quite unintentional. But if you are going to go into someone's space, Fran, there's some part of you going to,
So management is
the answer here, but also that there should be a decorum and people should get a sort of a list of what is and isn't okay in the pool.
Oh, right. And I can't swim, you see, so I have no knowledge about this. Is there a list of rules With
there's protocols and there's manners, Fran, and everyone should have those. If you're going to be inside, if you're just inside in the pool, Fran, you're there to take your exercise. You're there as well for the chats, and it's nice and social, and the water's lovely and warm, and they're all hopping up and bobbing up and doing whatever they're doing. But to actually interfere with somebody who is swimming in a lane, it's rude, and it's not okay. And there are people looking at the swimmers all of the time, because they have to ensure that there's not going to be any outcomes that are less than positive for their clients. So it should be easy to see that this new chap coming into the pool has, if he's burlish, let him be. If he's very withdrawn, let him be. But if he's invading other people's spaces and going into their lanes while they're doing their swims, that isn't right. And someone should say to him, listen, would you mind staying in this end or that end or over there in lane two, instead of that there's nine of you over in lane 6, 7, 8, 9. You know.
It sounds perfectly logical that's the way you should go on. Can I ask you before you go, are you following what's happening in the European election, or do you care at this point?
Oh, no, I think I would always care, because having served time there, Fran, it's so exciting. But what I will say now, as somebody who is completely not involved in politics, it's very hard to sort of keep track. Ireland South is now a huge, massive constituency.
Ten counties, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, to get around the 10 counties, all you're going to be able to do is call in for a cup of coffee. Hope you can get on the radio station that morning. Hope you can give your bits and pieces, and someone will say then, oh yeah, I like the sound of her, or never heard of her, never will remember her again. You know, or him.
So, are there many more going than your time? It seems like
there's a lot more. There's 14 seats now. There used to be only 12.
Yeah.
I think I was down in Wexford last weekend, and Mick Wallace's posters were up, the big pink, of course, and the white hair. And I think he is older and bolder on it, and sort of, you know, more messing and whatever. It's a very strange way of advertising, but I suppose here we are talking about him on the radio, and there's people say, go on now, Mick, now.
There you go.
But there's a lot of people think that they're going to go to Europe and make all the difference. I was on the Internal Market and Consumer Affairs because I replaced Alan Kelly. Mm. So that I took his committees.
Yes.
And everyone in Ireland is on the Agricultural Committee, because the whole farming thing.
Of course.
And it was a very, very interesting committee. And I can remember they were talking about everyone would have the one charger for the phone, and there wasn't going to be changes to charger. That hasn't happened yet, Fran. And it's 10 years since I was in the European Parliament.
So it's really slow moving.
It's so slow that when you get these press releases and you put them out, and you're thinking, there you are now, the people will remember that in 10 years' time when that actually comes to fruition. You know, they won't. But people do have to work hard there. There's a lot of opportunities for people and young people that go out to be stagiaires, which is, you know, that they're going to work with you for maybe 1,000 a month, or it could be 1,500 now. I don't know what the changes or the rates are. But there's a lot of young people can really benefit from working with MEPs as part of their team. And there's very good opportunities.
There are opportunities.
Oh yeah, very good opportunities. Yeah. And it would be said as well, interpreters, people don't think about that. There has to be an interpreter, including us, the Gaeilge. So when somebody would want to make a speech, they're there for all the people listening in, saying in English what the person in Irish is saying, and French and Italian and all the rest of it.
Tower of Babel, isn't
it? Fran, it's so unwieldy as to be, you know. And I suppose the chances are, it's like there's going to be the staples and the regulars. And I mean, if Brian Crowley was supposed to put his name up again today, he would be elected next week or the week after.
Absolutely.
Because he has recognition, and he has...
And that's what it's about, isn't it?
It's recognition. And it was... He was good, and he was, you know, he did his bits. And Sean Kelly, equally, he has a good vibe about him. He's very well known. And he, you know, he's been there. He knows what he's about.
I suppose. The only thing I will say, and no disrespect to your time there, but there seems to be a bit more interest in it now. Now, it's probably because of immigration.
Probably because of that, but also because you have, there's a lot of awareness now about the European Parliament. Like, there's legislation going through all the time, and people need to have a legal knowledge, and they need to have a basic understanding of what is involved in that. And there would be a lot of cases to be made for, say, young lawyers or young solicitors going out there as well, because they can get such a wide range of experience.
Of course,
so you're not just talking about the MEP, you're talking about the team that they have around them. Then you must remember, Fran, that there's 10 counties, then you have to have a presence in each of those counties. That is not cheap. That is not cheap.
And who pays for that?
You pay for it.
You pay for it. Okay.
Yeah. Now, the Parliament, depending on your group, so I was the Democratic group, and so they would support in some degree towards the cost of your postering. But like, each poster could be, like, you could be talking hundreds of euros.
So somebody independent then?
Again, it's about their message, and everyone does get a reasonable, if you like, time on the radio. They get a reasonable time. There has to be a TV debate. What seems to be strange at the moment, they have excluded some candidates and not invited them onto a panel, which again is a very strange decision by RTE, because they're hardly like at the pinnacle of high standards themselves, like, you know.
Yes.
So it's about people getting their message out. It's about people knowing them. And it's about people seeing the advantage of having a member of the European Parliament that's in their region that can be approached for stuff that would concern you about any legislation or legislative changes coming from Europe, that you have an understanding of it and you can see what it would mean for us. And we've done very, very well from Europe. We really, really have.
Interesting as always, Phil. Great to see you, and thanks very much indeed. If you have a problem you would like Phil to have a look at, it's tiptoday@tipfm.com. We'll take a break.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
O'Dwyer.